Welcome to the Functional Alignment Show, where I aim to functionally bring alignment into all aspects of your life. This show is a valuable resource for individuals seeking to optimize their health and well-being. Specializing in the fields of functional medicine, chiropractic, nutrition, and holistic wellness, this podcast is hosted by myself, Abby Borkowski, also known as Apples Eats on Instagram. The goal of this show is to offer insightful discussions and practical advice on achieving optimal health through a holistic approach. From addressing the root causes of stubborn health issues to exploring the latest research in functional medicine, this podcast offers a wide range of topics to empower listeners with the knowledge and tools to take control of their health. If you are ready to become functionally aligned, keep listening. Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast episode. So today we are going to have an extension off of my last episode. If you didn't listen to my last episode, feel free to. Basically, in short, it's talking about how, you know, like overstress, athletics, my experience as a college athlete, and how it's translated into developing PCOS afterwards, and even probably while I was in my college sports. However, PCOS can come from multiple different ways. This was just like my experience with it, so I just touched on that. But now we're just going to dive into the actual like presentation and symptomology on the signs that you see, all of that with PCOS. So this episode is strictly going to be about PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome. It's not a great name for it. It really should be like polyfollicular ovarian syndrome, because you really don't have cysts. You have like little follicles that just constantly build up on those ovaries. So they're not full-blown cysts. Sometimes they can be, but for the most part, they're just like follicles that really don't mature. And that's like kind of the main issue with the PCOS, is you really don't ovulate with it. So we'll get into all of that. But PCOS is really increasing. You're really seeing it. I think it's overdiagnosed, to be completely honest. I think there's a lot of underlying stuff that is causing the PCOS to present as that. But here we are. We have a lot of females with it. It's a very popular buzz term, but it is very real, and it's messing with fertility. People can't get pregnant. You're seeing loss of periods. All of this, you're seeing a rise in people on birth control for it. So kind of this is just going to be like a informative topic about PCOS throughout this whole thing. So we're going to go through like what it is, typical presentation of it, anomalies to PCOS, the way that conventional medicine would treat it. So if you were to go to like your OBGYN, like your medical doctor, how they would treat it. And then if you were to go to like a functional medicine doctor or like chiropractor, like what I aim to do in the future, how I would treat this moving forward. So I already discussed what PCOS is. Basically, it is abnormal cycles and ovulatory cycles. Cycle can last, you could get them every 30 days, and then you could go without getting one for 3 months. And again, you have these little follicles that develop on the ovaries, so you're able to see that through an ultrasound, an intravaginal ultrasound, and then blood work that can be done to detect this as well is, I recommend like running a Dutch hormone panel so that you're able to see specifically how your hormones and like their specific metabolites are working, but also if we don't have access to that, making sure that you're doing a serum blood test and making sure that you're getting androgens, progesterone, estrogens, FSH to LH ratio, like a whole thyroid panel done, and then I'm probably missing some, but DHEA, all that. So and prolactin. So I'd probably start there. And then it's also really important to look at on your like annual blood work, like that stuff, making sure that we're looking at insulin, your hemoglobin A1C, your glucose, fasting glucose, fasting insulin, that type of stuff, triglycerides, HDL, LDL, all that, so that we're able to kind of get a full picture of how you are doing with your insulin sensitivity as well. So PCOS, basically those markers that I just touched upon, most of those would be abnormal if you had PCOS. The typical presentation of the PCOS is that you're going to have high androgens, meaning a female will, they'll develop facial hair in spots that they do not want it, or just hair on the body in spots that they do not want it. You'll also be more insulin resistant, meaning that your blood sugar control is not as good as it should be. That's why making sure that we're looking at that fasting glucose, fasting insulin, hemoglobin A1C, all of that type of stuff is really important to get a picture of blood sugar control within the body. And typically, PCOS people are more so on the insulin resistant side, meaning that typically somebody with a typical presentation of PCOS may be overweight, maybe struggling with more so like metabolic issues and everything like that. And then you also have an anomaly presentation of the PCOS, which is it's more so the undereating, overexercising, overstressed type of PCOS that presents as well. So you have two ends of the spectrum, and they both are in this overarching term of PCOS. So it's really like a broad, symptomology, I would say, presentation. But getting to the root cause is really the importance of this disease and figuring out how to treat it for a specific person. So you can't really just test or guess. You really need to test to figure out what specifically is going on if you have this PCOS presentation. So basically, going off of what I was just talking about, having that poor blood sugar response, meaning that you're crashing in between meals, you really need like an hour nap in between the day, your cortisol is dysregulated. That's also another good test to do. Salivary cortisol levels is really important because it's able to tell if you are having like dysregulated cortisol, meaning that you don't get that spike in the morning with like your circadian rhythm where you want it really high in the morning. And then it kind of lowers throughout the day. But what we see is like a dysregulated cortisol, meaning that people are either like super high cortisol for a while and then chronically they go to super low cortisol. And that is kind of like along that whole like adrenal fatigue type stuff that you're hearing about as well. So again, PCOS is very correlated with all different types of conditions. So it's not just a sole condition. There's probably like all different systems are working to in this like and puts it in the bucket of what it presents as PCOS. And females are going to their OBGYNs once a year. So that's probably why it's being diagnosed more, is just because they're going to see a doctor once a year, as opposed to probably like you're not going to go see an endocrinologist once a year. So you're not going to be diagnosed with something else. So that's probably why we're seeing the prevalence of it as well. But nonetheless, it's a really important topic to talk about and how we can naturally kind of figure out how what we can do for our body. So then conventional medicine for PCOS typically will, put you on metformin, Ozempic even now. So now to kind of segue into some alternative approaches that can be used to help with PCOS. We are, so this is like not conventional medicine, what you wouldn't be prescribed. Just some suggestions from like research and from resources that I trust and from my functional medicine course that I've learned. So, first of all, the number one thing to, area to start with, I would say, is stress reduction. This is kind of, if you think of like layers of disease, I would say high stress, chronic stress is like the bottom layer for all disease presentation states that kind of manifest them. It is this chronic stress that the body has, and then disease states build on top of that because your nervous system, your immune system, and what's the third one I can't think of? But your nervous system, your immune system, and your endocrine system, that's it. They all work in conjunction with each other. We've specialized these systems into their own things and their own doctors. We have an endocrinologist, we have a cardiovascular doctor, we have an immune doctor. Like, these specializations aren't seeing the full picture. It's just doing band-aid approaches to try to make you feel better, but it's not actually getting to the root cause, when the root cause is looking at all the systems combined, because they are all interconnected. The reproductive system is very interconnected to the nervous system and to the immune system and so on. So understanding that will help you understand why these alternative approaches, and understanding that stress reduction is the key to, like, that's the first advice for any disease state, is just we have to decrease stress, reduce it in all aspects of life. My favorite stress management techniques are being outside, being with nature, the frequency and of quite literally the earth, and being outside is the same frequency as like our heartbeat. So that's very, if that doesn't tell you anything, it should. It means like we are the same as being outside in nature. We shouldn't be stuck in cubicle boxes all day. We shouldn't be stuck inside. We should be outside enjoying nature, going on walks, you know, just sitting outside, doing any little thing you can to be outside. So that's my number one thing for stress reduction. I did do a whole podcast on that, like maybe episode like 3 or 4, I can't remember. But if you're interested more in learning about that, go back to that previous episode. Another natural alternative that can be done, again, one of these isn't just going to heal at all. It's kind of a combination of everything, but it's just being mindful and understanding them. So again, I think a great tool to have is to track your HRV and your resting heart rate. I personally use the Oura Ring. Again, I just did an episode on the Oura Ring and all of its features and whatnot. There's also other gadgets out there, Garmin, so many more, but I love the Oura Ring. It tracks my HRV, and you want your HRV to be on the higher side, and you want your heart rate to be on the lower side. So they're kind of inverse of each other. When you have a really low HRV, that is suggesting that your body is in this chronic stressed out state and you're not recovering well. It's like the best way to kind of quantitatively see that your body's in a stressed out state. But you can work on that and trying to improve your HRV through like stress reduction techniques and everything should help it as well. So that's a great tool to have. And then I also really, for supplement wise, I've been really liking the supplement called inositol. Again, you want it in a 40-to-1 ratio of the myo to the D-chimer. It should say that you just don't want it to be all the myo and inositol. You want it to be the myo and the D-chimer for it to do its beautiful work that it does on the, it helps with insulin sensitivity and helping with ovarian health and stuff like that as well. So that's super beneficial for, that will be in a lot of like, prenatal vitamins that you see, but again, it's important for ladies with reproductive issues as well. And then apple cider vinegar is another tool I really like. I go through phases with this because I get really grossed out of it after I do it for a while. But I do find that I'm much more insulin sensitive, which you want the body to be when you are in this state. And my cravings are definitely decreased when I take the ACV. And I just do it in the morning. I take it like a shot and then I just chug some water afterwards. And it's best absorbed into the body. It's actually only benefits are if you take it in the liquid form. If you try and take a supplement of it, it's really not going to do that much work on the body. So I don't recommend taking a supplement form. I recommend taking the liquid form of it. And then also some other things that have helped, I'll just kind of list them off, are licorice, dandelion tea, quality omega-3 supplements, really good sleep, tracking your sleep cycles, making sure that you're getting enough REM sleep and deep sleep. Those are the most important. REM sleep is when you make your memories. And if you're not making your memories and you're not in REM sleep, your body isn't, your body just basically is in a brain fog state the whole entire time. And then magnesium glycinate can really help with the good sleep. So if you're looking for a sleep aid, I suggest magnesium glycinate, and then cutting out sugars and refined seed oils and refined carbohydrates. That is probably the number one key. If you could start anywhere, I would start with stress reduction, cutting out sugar, and trying to limit seed oils and just being conscious of it. Go through your cupboards, throw out just throw out the seed oils and throw out the sugar. You can get great alternatives. I purely just use butter and olive oil, and that's really all I need for whenever I'm making eggs, whenever I'm making steak, you name it. I am just using butter, and I make sure it's the grass-fed butter, but that's a great place to start, because these seed oils are like highly toxic. The way that they are processed is just not what our body should be consuming. So those are some great ways to kind of start. And they've also said that there's research saying that intermittent fasting can help. But again, that's kind of a really just broad approach. And I would only recommend that a female fasts at most 12 hours, meaning like they stop eating at 8 p.m. that night, and then they don't eat until 8 a.m. that morning, the next morning. That's probably the most I would suggest a female fast at all, just because we are very sensitive to stressors, and it affects our hormones way more than men, actually. So if you are looking into intermittent fasting, the most I suggest is at most like 14 hours, but that 12 hours is a good place to start. So with that, I could go on and on about this topic, but I will stop it there. I will do another episode in the future, more so focusing on perimenopause, menopause, and that stubborn weight gain that ladies experience around that age, around anywhere from like 40 to 50. So that will be my next episode, but this is just kind of like this series that I'm doing right now about like female health and everything. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you wouldn't mind rating it or sharing it, that would be awesome. But with that, I will see you on the next episode.